Swans lined up. All right, we're in. All right. Well, Pietro Fittipaldi is on the show. Mate, welcome. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, guys.
A man that wears many hats. What does your current CV look like, just for the folks at home? You're a current IndyCar driver for Dale Coyne. You're a Haas reserve driver. You're an Inter-Europol reserve driver.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? Just a streamer?
Yeah, man, there's a lot. First of all, thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate the setup. You know, we got a beautiful scenery here in the background.
You wouldn't believe who we had to pay off to organize this.
Some nice boats and stuff. But yeah, honestly, this year, yeah, racing an IndyCar, still reserve driver of Formula One.
Rory's just had a moment on the deck chair behind the camera, by the way.
You're good, though. But yeah, so subbed in for Clement, obviously, at Daytona this year. That was extremely last minute. Like, I arrived Friday at, 11 p.m.
Yeah. You rocked my suit too.
Yes.
Suit and seat.
Yeah.
And actually looking at you now, you're
seat?
Quite...
Yes.
How did you manage that?
Dude, I don't know. I was completely...
Must have been a long 24 hours.
Honestly, I was completely bruised after. But yeah, just doing a lot. I'm living in Indianapolis now.
Yeah.
Near the
team.
How
are you finding that? We tend to ask most of our guests how they're finding Indianapolis.
Yeah. I like it. I mean, it's calm. I grew up in the U.S. I was born in Miami, but Miami is very different than Indianapolis.
Very different.
So it's not as active, I would say. There's not so much to do, but we're busy with racing.
You're on the better side of 25, where you can appreciate a place like Indianapolis. I feel like all the young bucks get out to Carmel and they just
there's
no nightclubs and all that kind of stuff. But you know. Guys like you and I are a bit longer in the tooth.
Exactly.
So we can appreciate it.
We enjoy the relaxing.
A bit classier. Trashy clubs. Yeah. High fine dining.
Euro trash. So
How old are you, Clement?
I'm 23.
Oh, yeah. So he's still on he's a young buck, you know?
Yeah.
He's still deep in the clubs, getting it all. Yeah, I'm more country club than nightclub.
You'll get there.
I know.
Don't worry.
Sooner than later. I've got a couple of years of messing about before I head down that sort of...
Settling down path. Yeah.
Do you have a girlfriend?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, he's got several. So, back to you. You've done some IndyCar before with Dale Coyne as well. Are you finding this year different? Are you approaching it differently at all? Having a little bit more experience in different categories in between?
Yeah, I was, I did a few races with Dale in 2018, and then I did the ovals in 2021 when Grosjean was doing the road courses. Dale called me to do the ovals. And then this year with Team Rahal, it's a big opportunity, doing the full season. I was just one race over being considered a rookie, would have been super helpful because you get extra days of testing, you get extra set of tires in practice.
Yeah, there's prize money for the rookie championship as well.
Yeah, and you only know four out of the 16 tracks we'll be racing on. So a lot of these places, like coming into Long Beach, you're coming in straight into the first practice, not knowing the place, so it's not going to be easy. But we had a good race at St. Pete, another really good one at Thermal, and then just kind of keep the
Your pace at Thermal was really impressive.
Yeah, it was really good.
The whole team too.
Yeah, the whole team was doing really well there. So we'll see. We know the team needs to work on the street circuit car, on the ovals as well. That's something that they've been working on a lot, especially the Indy 500 car.
Yeah.
But it's been going well, and I've been wanting an opportunity like this for a really long time. So it came, I think, at a good time in my career.
Are you going at it full steam, or is there still a toe dipped in the Formula One world with Haas and all that kind of stuff?
No, my focus is fully IndyCar.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we were about to, on the way here actually, me and James were looking at each other, walking on the beach there, nice little shot, it looked very romantic between the two of us, and we were reminiscing about the past of Screaming Meals and how F1 drivers shy away from coming on here. Could be a career ender. And and you're actually the first driver who's actually raced in a race in F1.
Really?
And actually come on Screaming Meals.
So ask you about that then. Yeah, what was that weekend like when you got the call up?
Yeah, so I had already been with Haas since 2018. So it was like my third season with the team. It was during the COVID year, so it was 2020, last two races of the year. And we were in Bahrain and the race was happening. Grosjean had a big accident.
Yeah.
It was really scary at the time because honestly, you saw everything happen live on the TV. Yeah. Like the car crashes and boom, it's not like they cut out the scene because it happened so fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember I thought he went through an advertising board at the time because you saw the flash on the TV and then kind of nothing else.
But then, and you kind of saw the car catching fire and then they switched the scene. But when you see that, you're already there like, holy shit.
It's horrible, eh? When there's just, when you know there's been a shunt and you know that they're not showing you.
Yeah, and you saw the car catching fire and stuff, and then I remember, like, you have the radio on, and the engineers were asking, like, Roman, are you okay, are you okay? And there was, like,
no answer.
So it was, at that time, it was pretty frightening, because over the years, you know, you become friends with those guys, like Roman and Kevin, now with Nico as well on the team. And we basically didn't know how he was. We knew that he had gone to the hospital. It was Sunday night. And then I woke up Monday morning and I got a message from Gunther, and he was like, I need you to come to the hospitality. So I was like, fuck, what did I do wrong? Yeah. Whatever. And I was like, I knew it might be a chance Jake's of a call up. Yeah. It was like 9 a.m. He was like pretty direct. I checked Twitter some shit, like, what the hell? And then I got to the hospitality. He had like these papers in front of him at the like table we eat lunch at. And he was like, so are you ready? And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. What do you mean? And he's like, no, you got to say you're born ready. And I'm like, all right, Gunther, I'm born ready. And he's like, all right, you're going to be racing the next two GPs for us. I spoke to Roman. He's doing fine in the hospital. And he was happy that we're going to put you in the car. And it went from there. Luckily, I had, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday really to prepare.
Yeah.
Sometimes these call-ups happen, like how it was at Daytona, which it was like super last minute.
Behrman with Ferrari as well.
Yeah. Mm. So I had 3 days, which was good. The only tough thing was because it was COVID, I was supposed to race in Super Formula that season.
Yeah.
I you know, because of the pandemic, it wasn't possible. So I hadn't been in a race car for over like 7 months.
Right.
No race car.
A lot of the time, the sort of the last minute subs are straight out of an F2 or whatever. So
yeah. Or you're kind of active in the year.
You even know the track. I mean, like Ollie say, you know, obviously he just pulled Jeddah it. And he pulled it in F2. So it's not like you're stepping into, obviously it's a significantly quicker car, it's.
You come in warmed up.
Yeah.
So I hadn't been racing anything for 7 months. And the quickest thing I was driving was like a go-kart.
Yeah.
So I came in like
go-kart to F1, that is one hell of a step, brother. Like,
I just remember going through my head like FP1, like the longest I had been without driving a car before that was like 3 months, usually like the off season.
Yeah.
So this time was double that, and I'm going into like the biggest, you know, opportunity of my life. And I just remember kind of going into before FP1, like, am I gonna be able to, is it gonna come back, you know, the rhythm gonna come back naturally.
Kind of mentality. Yeah.
And it did, honestly, it did. We took it step by step, and we did two races there. And I remember in the second GP, which was in Abu Dhabi, like I remember that moment because I was much calmer, you know, going into that race. And just usually you stop the car on the grid, they do the national anthem, whatever. So you go up to the start finish line and they have all your names on like these little boards on the floor to know where you stand. So I had my number 51, you know, Fittipaldi.
They change them fast, don't they? I even remember when Lawson stepped in the Netherlands. I mean, his face was on the garage before you knew it. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I was there, like, they were doing the national anthem there in Abu Dhabi, and I was just there, like, watching, you know, the other drivers. It was like Lewis Hamilton to my left, like Sebastian Vettel to my right. I had Kimi Raikkonen over there. And I was like, dude, I can't believe, like, I'm racing with these guys that I used to watch on TV. And
I was going to ask you, like, the sort of 15 minutes, obviously you've got the national anthem and then you're going back to your car, you're getting in your car, you're normally briefed by your engineer about procedures and so on. When you get in that car with 5 minutes to go, you're strapped in and it's your first fucking race in F1, what goes through your, like, what were you telling yourself?
Like, bro, honestly, it's like when you get in the car, it's just like any other race. I don't know how to explain it, but when you're there standing and you're looking at all these other guys, like that moment, I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because being there, like, I'm at a race with all these legends that I used to watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something that it was really special, something I remember for the rest of my life. But when you get in the car and you actually strap in, it's like,
it's time to race and just focus on what you
have. It's just the same sort of, all right, let's get the tires in, let's do a, you know, proper race start over here.
Yeah. Mm.
So it was, definitely a cool moment.
Yeah, and so you've kind of driven everything as well through, you know, from karting to Formula One, but everything else in between. Maybe taking out the F1 car, because that might be the obvious answer. Is there a favorite wagon that you've jumped in, like that's something that you've just kind of clicked with?
Yeah, I got a chance to drive a Porsche LMP1 car in Bahrain. Yeah. That was 2017. Oh. That was one of the closest cars to Formula One.
To Formula One at the time.
That was the sort of DMG Mori. I think, yeah.
And it was the acceleration was even better than F1 because it's a four-wheel drive. Yeah. 1,000 horsepower on the exit to the corners. It was like super fast.
Yeah, and hypercars pretty cool now as well. But back then, those cars were...
Yeah, those cars, I think, were definitely faster.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is, I think nowadays they're quite heavy, the hypercars. And I remember watching the onboard of... I can't remember the driver who did it, but around the Nordschleife with the 919 that was unleashed. Yeah. That sort of last.
So I drove that car before Unleashed.
Before Unleashed, yeah. They took off all the restrictions on it, and it was it was scary.
Nuts.
They added DRS to it as well.
Yeah, that is cool. I think that is something endurance racing's missing. I noticed that in Barcelona. I was like, yeah, but a DRS.
It's hard to overtake, to be fair.
Yeah, the LMP2s. So difficult to overtake.
Because, man, honestly, you lose so much downforce in the high speed. And I was literally a few times, I was like, man, I am a second and a bit faster than this guy. But you can't get past. And it's the most frustrating.
Cause I know the feeling.
You're just waiting there hoping that traffic's going to get in his way.
Yeah.
Because that is kind of your DRS. It's as soon as he gets into traffic.
And the worst is, like, it ruins your stint, right? Because you're stuck. I remember my first Le Mans. At night, I was behind a bronze driver. It was a good bronze driver. His name was John Faub. It's an American guy, and I was behind him, bro, for like basically like 70% of my stint. I couldn't pass the guy, like a second and a half, 2 seconds quicker, and I could not pass him. Because, you know, like there were a little bit more trimmed out, so they were quicker down the straight, and I was like, it's the most frustrating thing.
Yeah.
Like you're just hoping for the guy to make a mistake, but he wouldn't. Like,
he drove
flawlessly.
Oh, fair play.
So obviously you've raced F1, and you've now done a bit of IndyCar. The two pinnacles of motorsport, you could say, in single seaters, both one in America and one in Europe. How different is the preparation between the two? In the sense that, obviously, you've just come into a race weekend. You don't know the track, similar to, obviously, how you stepped into Bahrain. You knew the track, but it was a new car and everything.
Thursday, media day, obviously.
Yeah, media day with screaming meals. And what's the major difference both on the driver side and also the team side? Like, how differently do they prepare?
So on the driver's side, I would say it's the same. You go through the same thing. At least I think every driver has their own preparation. Everybody works differently. Like I know the way I work is very different than what my brother does. Like we're completely two different people. He likes to do the things the way he does. If I try to guide him on how I would approach it, he would just tell me to fuck off. Like that's just how he is.
Yeah.
So we're very different. So I think everybody approaches it differently. For me, I approach F1 and IndyCar the same way, you know, looking at the data, the video beforehand, doing sim work with the team.
Yeah.
The team's preparation, I would say it is more difficult, I think, for teams in IndyCar because there's less people. And I feel like in Formula One, the engineers at the track, you can kind of only fine-tune the car.
Yeah.
But the car that you have is what you have, like aerodynamically, whatever the team developed. That's the performance you're going
to
get from the car.
Budgets are pretty vastly different, but to be fair to IndyCar, I don't think the difference in budget is necessarily reflected in what you see on the track.
Yeah, and I think the race engineers have more pressure when they come here in a way because like the cars are the same between all teams. So basically, you can change the setup and make the car actually go like
significantly faster
if they get it right or wrong. Where in F1, you're kind of stuck with that package unless a team
Before the weekend,
more.
You're going, I'm pretty sure we're fucked here.
Yeah, exactly. Where here, they can come with a completely different approach and either get it wrong or right. So
You can kind of reinvent the wheel overnight if you want to.
Yeah, so I feel like the IndyCar, it's like Formula 2, but just with slightly more people.
Slightly more people, sure.
It's that same approach, you know, where it's like a spec car, you know that you could have the same setup that an ART or a Prema has, but we don't know what they have. So we got to try to get there. So,
And did you spend any time in Formula 2?
No.
No, none.
I did
Good
World Series.
Good for you. I think
so why everybody like says that about Formula 2? What is it?
You start out with the hospitality. The food you're getting.
I know
the
hospitality. That's terrible.
It's not quite the.
I'd say the words Formula 2 are a lot closer to Formula 1 than it is to Formula 1.
But
Oh god.
We've got a truck coming.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, shit. She lost a leg.
There we go. Well, we're good. Hey.
Hey, Laurie.
Cheers, brother.
Rolling?
Yeah, I think we're rolling.
Yeah, you're out, mate. Getting all the behind-the-scenes content. Screaming organisation.
Right. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Excuse the truck.
Yeah, I would say the words Formula 2 are a lot closer to Formula 1 than Formula 2 is to Formula 1 in reality.
Now, you hear these, I never raced in Formula 2, but you hear that, you know, some guys get special engines and stuff like that. What do you think about that?
I think that...
no comment.
I never believe in that stuff, but I hear it so much that I'm like...
There is some performance delta at times. I think, honestly, on the engine front, they've made it a lot closer than it used to be. But, no, the thing is, like... I think the reason people sometimes dislike F2 is actually just purely the car, because you're almost, I'm not going to say you enjoy your career in Formula 4 and Formula 3, but those cars are actually quite good fun to drive. When you get to an F2 car, you do have more power and you've got more downforce, but it's such a heavy car that it feels like you're driving a GT, kind of.
Yeah, so when the result's bad and you haven't even had any fun, it's kind of a shit day out at the races, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
in that sense. But I think, yeah, put it this way. Every champion in Formula 2 loves the car.
Yeah.
Everybody else fucking hates it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it must be nice now for you to see Enzo having some success there. It took him probably a little while to get going in the Charouz, and now his last two seasons have been pretty strong, and a feature race win already this year. So.
Yeah, no, he's been doing really well. And he tested the Indy car in October of last year, and he said the car is very similar to a Formula 2 car.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Because yeah. They look a little bit the same now. They're a little bit more similar with that weird sort of foreskin.
He said the feeling is quite similar, just with more power.
Good thing I didn't come in.
Yeah, he declined those offers.
So when are you going to make the switch to Indy car? You're already here at Long Beach. You know, you like the United States.
He needs to get paid. He's demanding big money.
Well, you know me, I like to broker good deals for myself.
Yeah.
American girlfriend, you know. Oof. You can move to either LA, maybe Miami.
Yeah.
That's the thing as well. The one of the reasons, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, you got to go and live in Indy for your first few years. And then I looked at my age and I was like, do I really want to spend my best years in
the better part of your 20s?
Oh, you can live at Tom is in Blomqvist is in Miami, you see.
Yeah, but Tom's a more experienced driver. No, you know, he's got a bit more stature.
He's got the baggage,
out here,
you know. I understand.
Yeah, but, it's nice to be able to. I would have thought Chicago would be a nice option.
Oh, Chicago is decent.
I'd live in Chicago, but it's just American London, I reckon, probably.
Fair enough.
That's my
two cents. Now, this is a question we ask most of our guests. It's quite recent, actually. We've only asked one guest, but it's going to be a recurring question.
Most of our recent single guests.
Yes. Are you a naked sleeper?
Depends if I'm sleeping with someone or not.
Great answer.
I'm alone. Definitely not, you know?
No? Yeah, you don't run the nude slumber solo. Yeah.
No, I keep the AC on at night, you know? So.
Oh, no, I actually live in America. Yeah,
but when I lived with my brother in Italy, in Maranello, there was no AC in the apartments. Nothing to do there in the summers. And we were like, racing was shut down. And in August and in Italy, they have this thing called Ferragosto, which everything's closed.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, I'm not even joking, like 35 degrees Celsius, no AC. We're the top floor of the apartment building, so we're getting all the sun. We would buy these portable ACs called Pinguinos, which, like, you turn it on and there's, like, an exhaust that you have to lead through the window.
Like the old F1, like, vents.
But at those times, it was, like, basically you shower, you kind of pat yourself, but you try to keep a little bit wet, like, in the hair and stuff, and go straight to bed almost kind of wet.
Yeah.
Just with underwear on.
In London, I've gone to sleep with ice packs before, just, like, layered up.
No, because there's no AC. Like, it's
horrible.
The UK is a particularly difficult place nowadays.
Yeah. America gets a bad rap from Europeans for being uncultured and all that, but they get a lot of things right. I mean, air conditioning is just an absolute game changer. I can't see any arguments for living in the States, mate. But you mentioned living with your brother in Italy. Is that when the Fittipaldi brothers kind of all started up? Is it a COVID thing, or were you guys kind of streaming and doing stuff before?
No, it was a COVID thing. So we were doing like those virtual F1 races, which F1 did at the time during the pandemic.
You were well quick as well, you and your brother. You were quick.
Yeah,
quite rapid.
My brother was very fast. We ended up winning this championship that they did, and we were streaming it on Twitch on the Fittipaldi brothers.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, bro, we were into it, and we had the biggest. Brazilian streamer called Gaules. He would stream our races as well.
Wow, that's cool.
And he's one of the biggest like Twitch streamers in the world. And he was like, no, you guys have to do, you know, the Fittipaldi brothers channels. And we became really good friends with him. And it kind of went from there. And then when the races started, we said, you know, let's keep the channels going, but showing all the behind the scenes of racing. Mm. So we do it in Portuguese. We have an English channel on YouTube as well, which is, it's much harder to grow in English. It's very difficult. Yeah.
It's a little more saturated, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have quite a focused audience, I suppose, yes, in Portuguese.
But we try to show all the behind the scenes and kind of our day-to-day stuff leading up to the races and the race weekends and stuff.
Yeah. No, it is good fun. I mean, we've kind of got our own taste of it as well, kind of follow people with cameras following us around.
Yeah, well, we like to. I think we like to do more stupid shit.
Yeah, yeah. But, your operation's probably slightly.
No, but I've watched a few of your guys' podcasts and stuff. It's really good. Well, where is the scenario? Where are you guys filming? Like London? It looks so posh.
It's Marcus's building.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then when Marcus isn't involved, we've got deck chairs from the Airbnb.
Exactly.
And a
looks like a
park.
Heck of a lounge. Like it's like a proper nice place.
No, it's a very nice.
Oh,
place.
Yeah, the credit card gets milked over at over at that place. But the other thing I was going to ask you about, we've done the streaming, and we've done, what else? Have you got any questions while I stumble around? Let me refer to my call sheet.
Well, obviously, we mentioned at the beginning of the little pod there that obviously you replaced me in Daytona, and you couldn't quite fit in my seat. You're looking large, mate. Any sort of reason behind that? Is that for sort of a Baywatch, maybe a sort of a cameo down the line?
No, it's the American lifestyle, honestly.
just Instagram eating, muscles and sunbeds.
No, honestly, I'm just eating a lot more because for endurance stuff, the lighter you are, the quicker you are.
Yeah.
So I kind of went on this low carb diet just to try it. I like doing stuff like that, and I lost a lot of weight, and I stayed with it. And then now coming to IndyCar, I was like, all right, I'm going to do the complete opposite. I'm going to eat like crazy now, and I gained like 12 kilos since November.
I did something very similar when I got to London and I joined the insurance market. I gained 9 kilos in 6 months.
Jesus.
But all in quite a specific place.
Was it the stress?
Yeah, beer, actually. Yeah, it was actually the opposite of stress. I was drunk for 6 months. What I was going to ask you about, I don't, if you followed the show, you'll know that Clem is somewhat of an honorary Brazilian.
I know. You spent basically the winter there, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He's
still there mentally.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he really is. Like, he still hasn't left Brazil. Is there, we know about the meat, we know about the beaches, we know about all the hot people. What's something that's underrated about Brazil that doesn't get enough moonlight that you reckon?
Well, honestly, every time I go to Brazil, it's like, it's strange. The people who live in Brazil, they're like, oh, we want to, you know, move to the US or we want to move to Europe and stuff. But when I go to Brazil, I'm like, man, I wish I lived here. Mm. And it's just because the way the people host you there. Anywhere you go, like you go to a local, just a restaurant, or you go have a coffee in the morning, you know, you get like the fresh orange juice, the little coffee, the sandwich. It's like amazing. But even the guy that's serving you, like they just, you just feel much warmer, like the warmth with people. It's so much higher than any other place I lived. And that's what I love about it. Like you feel like you can create connections with people much faster than, you know, in the US. And I lived in the US my whole life, or in England, or Italy was more similar to Brazil.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that I really love about it.
Yeah. Have you ever run a big fat name drop, surely, around the streets of Brazil? Just, you
know,
last time.
To be fair, everything that you've said is exactly one of the main reasons why I've enjoyed it so much there. It's like, A, the people are so warm, so much more open, very easy to get to know each other and make friends, and at the same time they're very interested in whatever you do. They're very, I feel like, not that judgmental in a sense.
I feel like new countries often are, like, you get the same with Kiwis as well to a certain extent, like, whereas you get more snobbery in places like England and sort of Europe and all the sort of older countries.
No, but you have like great friends in England. It's like, it's more just like about, like, you go to, like,
it's the general stuff. Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
go to the local store or whatever, like the lady just treats you with more care. I don't know what it is.
They'll have a bit,
it's like,
of a,
they
chat.
Like to have a, they like to host you very well.
Yeah,
even if you're not your friend, it's just like a restaurant or something.
Yeah.
Especially a gringo coming in. I mean, I don't think I've told this story before, but I'd left home a bit early before going to Trancoso for New Year's. And I was
Trancoso, you said it like a Brazilian.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But I was leaving São Paulo and I left a little bit late. And Kaya stitched me up because they were going from Congolheiros and I had to fly from Guarulhos, which was significantly further away. And I got to the airport slightly late and I looked at the queue. Now, if there's one thing that's difficult about Brazil, it's the organization in airports. Yeah. I mean, it's the Wild West.
And the traffic as well.
Oh.
I know, the traffic
is
terrible.
But I got to the airport and I saw the queue and I was like, there is no way I am making my flight. So at that point, I just got straight to the front of the queue and I went, ajuda, ajuda, gringo, gringo, no comprendi, no comprendi. I don't understand. I'm European.
Yeah,
help
yeah.
me out here. Do you know what? Took me to the side, said, don't worry, sir, we'll get you on the plane.
Oh,
in
dear.
Great English, too.
Huh. And that takes a lot of courage to do
that.
That
would never happen
like
in France.
Oh, no. If you did that in France, brother.
I'm English, someone help me. You'd just be shocked.
Back to the end of the queue.
Spat on.
Yeah. You're not making your flight.
No,
but,
no, definitely not.
In that sense, they are very hostile.
Yeah. What's a country that you, because obviously IndyCar now is quite domesticated to the US and one race in Canada. Was there a country that you always liked going to on an international circuit?
I liked going to Japan.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, Japan is very cool.
Yeah.
Like, I stayed 3 weeks there last year because I had there was a Fuji WEC race, and there was Suzuka, and then, like, Singapore. And it was just, it almost feels like you're in another world.
Yeah.
Because first, you're disconnected from everybody you know, because when you're awake, everybody else is sleeping. And then when you're there, it's just, everything is so different.
Yeah.
So it just feels like you're in another world.
Yeah.
I would never live there because I feel like I would miss the people I know, like, too much, because
yeah.
you always...
Because, yeah, I guess for Super Formula, it's a long way
yeah.
away, right?
Like, but it does feel like you're in, like, a different, like, bubble and stuff.
Yeah.
So I always loved visiting that.
I heard someone say recently, like, if you grew up in, like, the Western world and you go to Southeast Asia, which is Asia in general, it's
yeah.
like a different planet. Like,
yeah, it is. It feels like a different planet.
It's the same. Like, there's still, like, yeah, there's corner shops with, like, drinks
yeah.
in them, but you don't recognize anything in there.
And it's as well because, like, a lot of the people you know, like, you're not getting messages on your phone because people are sleeping or whatever, so you just feel like you're alone.
Or you get a text, like I did this morning. I got a text from my mom, and I realized she'd send it at 2 a.m. But then I was getting myself ready to send her a little text back after my run, and I realized it was almost sort of like 11 or whatever. And I was like, shit, it's like 8 p.m.
Yeah.
in Europe, so I probably won't get to see it until tomorrow morning.
I got a phone call at 4 a.m. from some Durbrain who obviously can't read and out of office that says I'm on plus 8 hours BST. And yeah, oh, embarrassing. Phone doesn't stop ringing, right? So we'll swing it back around to this weekend. Is there anything that you're looking forward to about the Long Beach? It's my favorite weekend. I've been here a number of times. It's a great crowd. It's a great vibe. Driving it, it looks like a tough one. So is there anything that you're kind of carrying forward into it?
Yeah, it's tough, the street circuits in IndyCar, because, you know, like it is an F2, the steering wheel is so heavy.
You're just wrestling
stuff.
It, right?
It is so bumpy, the track, so you're really just hustling the car. It's my first time here, so I was actually speaking to my mom, and she would come with my granddad to a lot of the races, and she would actually stay in this hotel, and she would, like, remembered how to walk to the paddock, and that was like 25 years ago.
Because they used to have F1 here, right?
Yeah, but even IndyCar,
oh,
car back
yeah.
in the day. And she was like, yeah, I was like 12 and stuff, and I went many years to Long Beach GP. We stayed at this hotel next to the aquarium. And I was like, oh, I'm in the same hotel. And she's like, yeah, you're going to have to walk around the aquarium to get to the paddock. That was like 25
yeah.
years ago or something. It's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, just being here and experiencing it, trying to learn the track. But when you're focused on the race weekend, that's what I feel like. You don't get to experience it, you know,
yeah.
the weekend
yeah.
that much. You really feel the vibe because you're so, like, with
you're
the
so
team.
In
you're in the, yeah, you're in your
and
bubble.
At the same time, mate, like I told you, You're looking big,
yeah,
you're looking buff. So I don't think the physicality
just a little chunk here, you know. I got the little bread rolls down here.
Away as
yeah.
The
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just the slight aspect of a dad bod is important on everything. I think if you're
yeah.
too immaculate with the sort of muscular structure, then you just
well,
lose respect.
Well, they have said that dad bods are more attractive.
Dad bods are in, which
yeah.
is a relief to guys
it's
like
us. It's sort of a new trend going out there.
That's
so.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, no, oh, mate, bring it on. Because honestly, I'm not going to the gym anytime soon. Absolutely not. But, you know, it's cool to have something like a little bit bougier after, what, Alabama next. And a lot of
yeah.
the races are in the kind of Midwest. So to come out to California,
it's
kind
it's
of
nicer.
Cool.
I didn't get to see Beverly Hills or anything. I wanted to go, but
yeah.
next time. Did you guys go? Is it cool?
We're going this afternoon.
Going this afternoon. Yeah. I myself wasn't really present at last year's race.
Yeah, you were in Sunday.
Yeah. I was supposed to be here for the 4 days, but I found myself sort of stuck in Beverly Hills.
Operating a different direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and more of the entourage lifestyle.
But yeah, no, I'm here for the... for the full weekend, hopefully, this weekend, as long as I don't.
Beverly be good. And we've got a Dodgers game I'm really looking forward to. That's tomorrow night, right?
Baseball?
Yeah.
I never watched a baseball game.
No, I mean, I've been to a couple. I mean, I don't follow
it. It's good just to experience it.
Gotta go, right? Yeah, gotta do
just
the things.
Hot dogs, really.
Yeah. Have you been to a football game in Brazil?
You Palmeiras.
You're Palmeiras?
Yeah.
Where's the
football? I don't think for anyone. Who do you go for?
Corinthians.
Oh, bro, come on. Who put you on that?
Caio, man.
No way, dude.
But I tell you what, I went to watch a game, and that football out there, I mean, the level is... it's not so good.
I've heard it's just like fast, like everyone's just running at 100 miles an hour.
No, that's here in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to...
here in Europe?
Like in Europe... not in America. Back in Europe, it's a lot quicker, the football, than they are in Brazil. In Brazil, it's a bit slower, there's a bit more tricks and,
it's more
sort of playing.
Yeah.
But, man, the crowd's a different thing. Like, in Europe, I've gone to a few games of Chelsea this year, and you can sometimes hear the away fans.
Yeah.
I think in Brazil, if you can hear the away fans in your home stadium...
that's shameful.
It's shameful. Mm. Like, and the crowds... I mean, one of them set fire to the grandstand.
Yeah,
it gets crazy. But I know in the UK they get some pretty crazy...
it depends
where. It's more the abuse as opposed to like the mass like crowd atmosphere. Like, you get the sort of 12-year-olds like pulling the finger to crowds and like lobbing bottles. There's some horrible scenes in British football.
One of the greatest sort of, for me, sort of filming that you can do in a game of football is when a particular football player will go and celebrate in front of the away fans that he scored at home. And he's just there sort of like this. And if you get the back shot of the player and you just look at the crowd, the number of middle fingers that you'll find is mesmerizing.
Yeah, people throwing stuff at you. I mean, actually, we brought up celebrations when we had Nick Cassidy on the pod, and I'm yet to see anyone pull the Kelly Slater that I discussed.
The Kelly Slater?
So you've won, right? You're P1, you're out of the car, and then you sort of, you lie down on the nose and you start to paddle out and then you pop up and give it one of those. I really need to see that, and I'm hoping to see it.
Nick said he's going
to
do that?
Didn't say he would, but I'm hoping to see it from him.
So you win this weekend.
If I win this weekend, I'll do the Kelly Slater.
Because we're at Long Beach.
Yeah.
Got to pull the Kelly Slater.
I don't care how cheesy it looks.
Yeah, got to be done. Got to be done. Is there a celebration that sticks out in your mind? Have you ever pulled an unbelievable one yourself?
No, I haven't. I haven't, but I used to watch NASCAR back in the day. There was a Denny Hamlin does the backflip, or Carl Edwards, did the backflip out of the car.
It's a high-risk maneuver.
It's a high risk, but he did it every time he won. There's the Castroneves climbing the fence and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking like the Indy 500 now, if you win, he climbed the fence. Joseph Newgarden ran into the stands. Like, what else is
there to do? You've got to get nude. That's the only option, nudity.
Like, the other thing is like do donuts and stuff, but it's like there's a risk of crashing as well.
Yeah,
the problem with racing as well, and this is something that I found, is when you're confident enough to start thinking about a celebration, most of the time, A, it doesn't happen that often that you walk into a race and you're like, unless something goes really wrong, I've won this thing.
Yeah.
Where you've actually been able to think about what you're going to do. And secondly, when you start thinking about it, most likely something wrong happens.
Yeah. I mean, like, McLaughlin, I don't even think he was trying anything. He just fell off the car once.
I remember that.
Just, like, tried to jump off and then, like, landed and just didn't do it very well.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a few of those. There has been some shocking celebrations in IndyCar over there. And that 500 as well, you stay in the car so long.
You do, because you have to go in and then like everybody's like they're tuned.
And now you go up the lift.
Yeah, it's like almost a delayed celebration.
You've probably won the 500 for a good 7 or 8 minutes by the time you're actually out of the car.
Yeah, the sort of highs have already started leaving you.
Yeah.
But that milk must taste so good.
Oh, I'm sure.
I was in Indianapolis and they were asking what type of milk do you want.
Yeah, what did you go for?
No, whole milk.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to get like half of a skim milk or whatever.
Or
you just
anything,
2%,
yeah.
Like you just won the 500, the whole milk. So my granddad drank orange juice when he won the 500, and that people still to this day come up to me and like, "You're not gonna drink orange juice, are you?" But I like pissed off, dude. I get comments and stuff.
Have upset
I get
the
people
locals.
Messaging. No, they took it personally because I'm serious to this day because it's a tradition. They've been doing it for 100 years.
Is it lactose intolerant?
And it's from milk from the Indiana farms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From the Indiana state. So it's like when you do that, it's like you're breaking a tradition. Like they actually like there's hatred towards that gesture.
I think the fact that for us, it's still sort of milk.
Yeah,
it's still almond milk. Yeah, listen, good luck, guys. I know the shit you're gonna get.
But literally going flat out and just going, "Fuck the milk, let's get some orange juice down."
Yeah, that's
a bit more rogue.
I don't know why my granddad did that, honestly. For
anyone,
what
else would you substitute with, though? I mean, because there's not a lot of other things that look like milk. A milk substitute would be quite difficult.
I'd sub it for a nice espresso martini.
Yeah, that'd be good. Because actually,
2 hours of running.
Even for like a Grand Prix victory, historically, it was you got a glass of champagne for the win. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got the reef. You got the, so they do that at the 500 still. And then you were given a glass of champagne. And I can't think of anything less appetizing than a glass of champagne after getting out of a race car.
I tell you what, it can be particularly dehydrating, but at the same time, very hydrating. Getting a bit of champagne down you after a race, especially a long race.
It's a good feeling though.
It hits you hard too. Because you're dehydrated.
You're just so depleted by the time.
It comes in like heated, but it's a good feeling though. Like when you're on the podium. Yeah.
Yeah, it must be warm. Is it?
Yeah,
it depends.
Kind of warms you up.
If it's a good organization, it'll be cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how was the Zandvoort champagne?
Warm.
Classic. Oh, well, I think we can probably wrap it up there, mate. Thank you very much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I appreciate it.
Best of luck this weekend.
Oh, thank you. Go well. You've seen the results by now, so congratulations.
Kelly Slater. Kelly Slater.
Yeah, we'll stand by.
We'll put the replays. Roy will put it up.
Yeah, boom. All right, mate. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Take it easy.
Appreciate it.